Now, joining me this morning to talk about this is Irish news journalist Alison Morris. Also have Alex Kane in the studio. Good morning to you, Alex.
Good morning, Vinny.
And then it's written down here as the former former editor of The Nolan Show and a spin doctor, David Gordon. Good morning, David.
Boss, I think you should say.
I didn't want to describe you as my former boss because I thought that was deeply inappropriate, but they've let you back on the airwaves.
Can I just say, you're sounding really good in that job.
Oh, really? Thanks. Good.
Much better than that other fool, wherever he is. I can't remember his name.
Be careful now. I think he might...
You
were making more headlines than him for a while, and I'm not sure he was too happy about that, Mr. Gordon.
I wasn't making more money than him, let's put it like that.
Well, David, we'll maybe not go there just yet. And before we move on, we're going to talk about your piece in the Belfast Telegraph shortly.
Yes.
But I have to say, David, to be serious, that picture you keep using, when you any printed picture of you, it's about 20 years old, so you need to get a grip and get something that's a bit more up to date.
I don't choose a pictures, thankfully.
That's easy. Alex Kane, your thoughts, I was asking you during when that was playing, have you enjoyed this election? Because a lot of people, they do enjoy the energy and the passion behind it.
Well, yeah, I should have enjoyed it, Vinny, but I find it very difficult to get engaged this time because what I'd hoped right at the beginning, I think I've said to you before, would be an actual election about government and how departments are run and how we make spending policy decisions and so on, turned into a fairly usual rundown between unionism and Sinn Féin. So in that sense, it bored me, but certainly I think the outcome of what looks like it's very difficult to make a definitive call on what
get off the fence, Alex.
No, I'm just saying it's very difficult to make.
What are you feeling so far?
I'm feeling that at the end of the day, I think when we get to sometime tomorrow afternoon, we'll probably sit back and go, you know, it's pretty much the same. There will be changes in figures. I think what it's clear that at this stage, Sinn Féin seems to have had their voters energised by Arlene Foster's attack. And all the way through this campaign, Vinny, I have said that she is aiming at the wrong target. Don't make Adams a bogeyman. Don't make this about Sinn Féin. Make this about unionism, her vision of unionism, her vision for unionism and Sinn Féin working together in Northern Ireland. She did none of that. And I think she quite clearly annoyed an awful lot of even soft nationalists. That's got them some out to vote. We don't know at this stage yet. Some unionist middle class areas have gone up, but I don't know whether that's going to Alliance. I don't know if it's going to UUP. I don't know whether it's some unionist coming out to back her. So at this stage, until we see that, we know where the nationalist vote is going. It's clearly going to Sinn Féin. The unionist increase, I don't think we can say with any certainty where that has gone.
What do you think, Alex, the suggested higher turnout, what does that tell us, apart from the fact that maybe some nationalist voters are vexed towards Arlene?
Well, at this stage, Vinny, that's all it tells us. It tells us that Sinn Féin will have a better election than some of us thought, that they might, instead of having 23, 24 seats, they might actually push it up to 26, 27 seats. But until we see if the DUP has taken a hit, its vote will come down, certainly. We may end up with Sinn Féin the largest party in terms of votes. But we saw that back in 1998 where the SDLP had more votes than the Ulster Unionists, but the Ulster Unionists had more seats. So I still think my original prediction was that at the end of this election, it would be Sinn Féin and the DUP as the two lead parties. I still think that's going to be the outcome.
Alison Morris?
I agree with that. First of all, I'd like to welcome David Gordon back into the light.
Let's not be nice to him, Alison. Get back in your cave, you. He was my boss for many years and is, let's not start to smear his reputation, Alison.
It's good that he's now back in the resistance.
rather than fighting
with the dark side. But what I would say is sort of agree with Alec in some respects, and then it's unlikely that we'll have a massive change and that we'll not have Sinn Féin and the UP in the top post. I do think that the larger voter turnout that was reported in the sort of more middle-class affluent unionist areas is going to hit the DUP. I think they're the areas where they're more likely to be punished for the RHI scheme and other scandals. Although I'm not convinced that those folks are going to slide to the Ulster Unionist Party. I think that Alliance might be the people who benefit from that swing. I agree that the Sinn Féin managed to get their vote out. But what you have to remember is the nationalist vote had been dropping drastically over the last number of years. It was on a downward trajectory. So all what really has probably happened is it's maybe come back up to sort of natural levels again. And also I did see a lot of people yesterday who would have been young voters or people who had never voted before. And that leads us into a sort of unknown because we don't know where those people's votes are going and we don't know what, because there's no precedent for it. I disagree with Alex in that I think it was quite an interesting and exciting election, and that we've never had an election called like this on just one issue, which was allegations of wrongdoing and corruption, to then lead on to what it is basically going to be a referendum, if you like, on the future of Pádraig Sheridan.
Alison, going back to what you said about the Alliance Party there in terms of their vote, do you think that they will hold the numbers they had, or will they make some gains as a result?
I think if they held the numbers they have, that would be a success, because remember that we're moving into a much smaller assembly. This is an 80-seat assembly, so if they were to retain the 8, if they were to make any gains at all, it would be an amazing election for them. But what the DUP have to do, and basically this is an election that was, the future of Arlene Foster's career relies entirely on how these votes are counted out today. If she manages to keep above 30 and keep, you know, that sort of golden number which allows the DUP to hold a petition of concern, I think her leadership is probably pretty safe. If she sinks below 30, well, then her leadership is in doubt. And I think that Sinn Féin have drawn a red line. They've said the red line is Arlene Foster. She has to step aside to allow the RHI inquiry. She said that's not going to happen. If she falls below 30, I think her own party might be the people who remove her. And in which case, will Sinn Féin be able to do business with the new leader of the DUP in 3 weeks' time? I'm not sure that that's going to be a possibility, but it does change the sort of dynamic entirely.
Okay, before we come to David Gordon, not that I'm trying to put you off, David, at all, David McElveen was on The View last night with Mark Carruthers, and Mark asked David McElveen if he thought that Arlene Foster would still be the DUP leader come Monday.
I don't.
You seriously don't?
I don't. And I've been on the record
that
on this.
Serious?
I've been on the record on this for quite some time, as you know, Mark. I don't believe. I believe, unfortunately, she's being viewed as an electoral liability even now. There is not the same upbeatness within the ranks of the party, regardless of what Alex witnessed at the conference. There is not that same upbeatness that there was whenever even Peter Robinson was in charge, and certainly under Lord Banside, there was absolutely none of it.
Alex, you were on the programme last night as well. Were you surprised when you heard that from the former DUP MLA?
I'm not entirely surprised, because I think he's clearly fueled by an internal anger. It's a psychological anger he has with Arlene. And I think he represents the old-fashioned wing of the DUP, some of whom, I don't know, maybe 10-15%, were not happy that an Ulster unionist was taking over the leadership. I also think he's wrong that she'll be out by Monday. But there are circumstances, let's call it the catastrophic moment, which would happen if the Democratic Unionist Party's overall vote had fallen significantly, if there isn't a unionist majority in terms of MLAs in the Assembly, and if Sinn Féin comes back with less seats in the DUP but with more votes. I think a lot of people, senior figures in the DUP, would turn to Arlene and say, this is your doing, Arlene. This, you were the champion 9 months ago. You have brought us to this. I think at that point, if that's where we stand tomorrow afternoon, Vinny, those three factors come into play, then I think her position probably is untenable.
Well, David Gordon, you worked quite closely with Arlene up at Stormont. What are your thoughts on what McElveen said last night?
Well, let's wait and see. But it's a pretty basic rule of politics. Parties always love their leaders until they have a bad election.
Yeah.
And then the knives come out. But I don't think the DUP will want to be rushed on anything. You know, people wrote Peter Robinson off in, I think it was 2010, they lost his Westminster seat, they bounced back. The DUP will always tell you that they're a family. Now, as we all know, families aren't always the most harmonious places. But they'll want to sort of put behind closed doors, and it's just too early to say.
Do you think, David...
If they get 30 seats or more, the slur will flow like water in DUP headquarters. So, you know, it's early. There's something going on here with this high turnout, and we don't know what it is. And that's the beauty of elections. It's the people who are deciding, not the politicians, not the spin doctors or the journalists or the pundits. The people decide, and we have to wait and see and count it all up.
Well, that wait and see is one of the big questions, David. And you mentioned this in your article today in terms of this government limbo land. So where are we now, and what is going to happen?
I mean, the elections are fascinating, and heaven for political nerds. We'll get our anoraks on, we'll get the popcorn in, we'll sit and watch it all. It's great, and it's clearly going to be a day of drama. But the big question that I'm calling the question, the sport question, the Sue Barker question, what happens next? We are in this limbo land now. We've effectively got no ministers, no budget, no executive, almost no government civil servants running the place. And the lack of a budget will become a big issue within a matter of weeks. We've also got this deadline of a few weeks until, under the current setup, another election. And I can't imagine there's too many people listening home want another election. So there's big, big calls for the Secretary of State to make in all this.
Well, another election, of course, that wouldn't really do much to instill any confidence in the voter, David.
That's an issue, but it's possible that James Brogan Chair thinks, you know what, this is a bit of a lever I had to pressurise the parties into getting on with it. You know, if you don't get a deal, go back to the doors and explain why, get the posters up again. So he may push that. I don't know how long he'll push that for, but it's a possibility. If the budget uncertainty rumbles on and becomes more and more unstable, that he step in and go for some form of direct rule, even direct rule for a weekend to sort things out? Who knows? And then lingering in the background is this issue of the MLAs keep getting paid if they're stalemate, no functioning devolution, and if they do, how long do you pay them for? Big issue. That's not as easy as it may sound. I can hear that.
Well, what's the answer to that, David? We get asked that quite often in terms of now MLA pay. What happens? Do they get full pay? How long for?
My understanding, and Alex can probably back me up here, is that the minute they sign in, the first day at school, back in the first day, the pay starts and the expenses start. That's my understanding of it.
That's right, David, yeah.
And so the question is, if we don't have functioning devolution for weeks or even months while talks go on or some form of direct rule comes in, what happens? Between 2002, 2007 and suspension, they kept getting paid at a reduced rate. Critics said, you know what, your MLA stands for Members of Legislative Assembly. You're not assembling, you're not legislating. What are you getting paid for? It's a hard issue, yeah. Because if the Secretary of State puts out a statement saying, right, on July the 1st, all pay stops, that sends out a signal about devolution and the chance of it coming back. It also means that MLAs are looking for work elsewhere, and the brightest and the best may well be the first to get jobs elsewhere.
That's a key point, David. We want to try and keep the best people, and if we're not going to pay them, why would they stay?
Getting it back up and running again and getting the functioning assembly going again. So I'll be interested. Alex was around, I think, 2002, 2007, so maybe he can spell out his thoughts on that.
Yeah, David, you're right that they kept the money rolling at that time. And the reason they did, that's the exact point, David, that the fear was that it sent a message. If you stop paying these people, you're sending the message devolution isn't going to work. So yes, there's going to be no rush to suspend payments now, because in fairness, these people are seeking a mandate. They've got the mandate. It'd be unfair to say you can't be paid at this stage. But there'll come a point when the Secretary of State has to make a calculation after, it'll be longer than 3 weeks, he has to make a calculation, Vinny, whether or not he thinks there's any likelihood in the near future of Sinn Féin, the DUP and the other parties as well, being able to reach some sort of deal. If he draws that conclusion, he will tell the parties, look, my conclusion is you cannot do this, give me any evidence. If they can't do that, at that point he will have to say, look, I can't justify this going on for, months, maybe a couple of years, you being paid.
It's the uncertainty,
people.
I guess, that's what I'm
saying. David will know they don't like uncertainty.
Yeah.
I also agree, it can't go on for 5 years like it did last time.
Yeah,
I don't, 2002, 2007 is a different era. There was, pre-austerity, pre-expenses scandals, all that stuff. The mood wouldn't be there to put up with that for us. So, and again,
that's right.
It's a possible lever to put pressure on the parties. Peter Hain used it quite effectively in the run-up to the 2007 deal. It was, if you don't do a deal, the money stops.
Well, listen, Maurice, money is one of the things that gets people vexed, it gets them annoyed, passionate. What do you think?
And I think that we're in an election that was caused, let's face it, by money and the mishandling of money in relation to the RHI scheme. I do agree with what David Gordon has said there in relation to people's tolerance. In 2002, we were still in the very early days of the peace process. And I think at that point in time, people were much more tolerant in allowing politicians space and time to work things out. They can no longer go to the public and say, oh, we're the people that delivered peace. That's not going to wash anymore, and certainly not with anyone under the age of 30. So I think that there is going to be pressure on them to try and get this sorted out and get back to work. And I don't think that they'll find the public very forgiving if a year from now they're still being paid wages and not actually doing the job they're paid to do. I do think that it's inevitable that we're heading to some sort of form of direct rule, not entirely, a full-fledged direct rule, but there will have to be some intervention from Westminster in order just to keep the show on the road, to see what way things are going with the negotiations. But it's hard to see Sinn Féin and the DUP's differences, which they tried very well to keep hid, and dare I say, tried very hard to spin under a certain person that may be on the phone.
It's more complex than the fact that they were at each other's throats the whole time and hiding it from the public. There was actually, I saw it up close, there was actually serious work being done by serious people on both sides. Now, I'm not saying they're all going out for beer together at the end of a meeting or becoming best chums, but, there were clearly also big fault lines and a lot of unfinished business there as well. And government's difficult anywhere, coalition government more so, but, the coalition with DUP and Sinn Féin is a big challenge. You've got two parties
arguing
opposing objectives. Party bases wanting totally different things. So you get tensions over all these things, and then bang, RHI was in the top of it.
Okay.
That's
Alison wants back in there. Alison, go ahead.
All that,
Alison, you nearly think he was media trained. You need to get back in there.
Martin McGuinness was probably the stabilising factor in that, and that he did was the kind of person who would have stepped back. He did have that sort of statesmanlike quality, regardless of what you think about his beliefs or his past. And I think that he maybe tried to steady that ship quite a lot. I don't think that, you know, the new form of Sinn Féin without him, they've realised that their voters, their core voters, aren't going to tolerate that as being seen as, you know, the DUP's minions, as being, you know, seen as their whipping boys. We've seen that with the fact that they were punished last year in their heartland of Foyle and West Belfast by people before profit taking the vote. Sinn Féin have learned a lesson from that, and they're not going to go back to that. We're not going to go back to that same. And the DUP, I don't think at this point in time, have realised that the sort of war with republicanism as such is over. They're still on the defensive. You know, they're still constantly fighting against what needs to happen for a coalition government to work. And that's a pretty dire situation for any Secretary of State to think they can step in and sort that out in 3 weeks. If you couldn't sort that out in 40 years, how do you sort it out in 3 weeks?
Okay, Alison Morris, stay there. David Gordon as well, and Alex Kane. We're going to take your calls in just a moment. Brian in Lambay. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Vinny. Listen, you're going to have to stop this idea of perpetuating Nolan, yourself, your ex-colleague there, that these people are intellectuals. They're not. If they were to stop getting paid now, I guarantee 85 to 90% of them couldn't get a job that paid even half of the salary they're getting. They are not intelligent. If you take them, if you take this sectarian headcount out of Northern Ireland politics, they wouldn't even be in politics.
But is that fair, though, Brian, to kind of tar everyone with that same brush?
No, I'm not tarring everyone, because there is maybe 10, 15% of them who actually do have intelligence there. But they're not being elected because they're going to do the best for our society. They're being elected because they're throwing a red, white and blue out, or a green, white and gold out, or stop lemons getting in. I went to vote last night, and a certain canvasser for a political party says, take a voter, remember to vote Leap, keep them out. That's the idea of our politics in Northern Ireland.
Well, David,
there is very little intelligence in Northern Ireland politics.
David Gordon, that's one thing we hear quite often on this programme, that issue, the orange and green, the red, white and blue, and the people that just can't not vote tribally.
Yeah, but I mean, it's easy to make sweeping statements, and I understand where Brian's coming from, but I mean, that's the system of politics, it's not government we have. And one thing I'll say, you know, and I've...
Arlene did make a lot off the boogeyman Gerry Adams, David. So Arlene did make a lot off the boogeyman Gerry Adams.
She presumably does that because she thinks that's what plays well in the base. Of course, that's part of the problem we have. What gets you elected, what gets you a big vote with the base, doesn't necessarily make for good partnership government all the time. You can say it right across the board. But what I'll say for all of them, okay, is they've all put their names forward and stood. Something I've never done, not since my student union days, which was not always successful. And so, you know, I need a... You know, but we've been respectful of the day in the sense that they've stood out there and had a go. And the ones in power will have to take difficult decisions at some point, because there are an awful lot of issues that are very, very hard to resolve in government. That, you know, even the basic stuff that I started talking about, the bread and butter issues, how we fund our health service, what hospital services we centralise and what we localise, all those big issues. It's much easier to be a pundit or indeed a spin doctor than the one that's actually having to take a decision and then get elected after it.
Okay, Alex, you want to back in there?
Yeah, just on what your caller was saying, I think two things worth saying. They still, at this stage, the majority of those in the Assembly are the older generation, and it's wrong to dismiss them as stupid, because a lot of those people, Vinnie, put their heads above the line very publicly back in the 70s and 80s when it wasn't safe, when it wasn't an easy thing to do. But the other thing I have to tell you, I spend a lot of time doing seminars and consultations and talking to a lot of panels and so on, where you have these audiences of your middle-class intelligent people. Let me tell you my experience on years of doing that is those people, for all their intelligence, for all their professional background, have exactly the same problems when it comes to us and them, because when you start talking to people about identity, about border, about unionism and republicanism, you find exactly the same type of debate. So yes, you might get more coherent and a rhetorical people in the Assembly. If you had the intelligent people, you would come back to exactly the same problems.